Mountain View. "This is where your wise man lives?" Nick Matrenko said, puffing with exertion. He and Rachel Amber were struggling up a steep embankment along the side of Highway 101. Traffic was buzzing in orderly fashion along the old road, every car, truck, and bus moving at precisely the speed limit, neatly spaced by their automatic guidance systems. Rachel had borrowed a coupe from the library where she worked and parked it on the shoulder of the highway. Nick hoped the police drones patrolling the road wouldn't send an impoundment team before they got back to it. Gulping for air, Rachel said, "This is where he told me to meet him." Nick frowned unhappily. The area was hardly the kind of place he'd expected. Looking around, he could see in the distance the old space museum and amusement park down by the water's edge, and farther off the clustered buildings of venerable Stanford University. Rolling green hills were studded with row after row of government-built housing, identical as if they'd been stamped out of a cookie cutter. He'd been skeptical of Rachel's description of this wise man, this guru whom she idolized. But she was so enthusiastic, so determined to get Nick to meet the guy, that Nick gave in and made the trip down to Mountain View with her. "The things a guy will do to get laid," he muttered to himself. They reached the top of the embankment, and there was nothing to see. No buildings within a kilometer or so, not even a tent.
"There he is," Rachel said, pointing excitedly.
A dozen or so people were squatting on the grass a few dozen meters away, in a sort of glade that was shaded by stately old trees. She started running toward the group, her face alight with anticipation. Nick hurried after her. A tall, gangling black man was standing before the little group, pacing up and down as he talked and gestured with both his long arms. He was wearing what looked to Nick like a bathrobe, grayish-white. As the two of them got closer, Nick saw that the robe badly needed a washing, and the man's face was stubbled with several days' worth of heavy dark beard. "I was like you," the man was saying in a deeply sonorous voice. "Lost, adrift in a world not of my making, accepting the pittance that the government doled out in exchange for remaining idle, useless, impotent." Despite himself, Nick felt the words hit home. "That's what I am," he told himself. "Idle, useless, impotent." The man nodded once at Nick and Rachel as they sat down at the rear of the little group. He was really tall, like a basketball pro, but gaunt, just skin and bones. Rachel was staring at him in wide-eyed awe. Nick felt jealous. Raising his voice slightly, the man continued, "But then I had a life-changing experience. I killed a man," the group gasped. "He was a child molester. He had been convicted by the courts and released by the psychologists. But then he struck again and was arrested again. He was evil personified, and he had learned how to cheat the penal system. I was in jail with him. I had been arrested for hacking into the scoring program for the year's high school examinations. I was 14 years old." The man paused. Every eye was riveted upon him. Every breath abated, waiting for his next words. "He raped me. In my prison cell, he beat me nearly unconscious and sodomized me. I thought my life had ended. I felt pain and humiliation and deep, deep shame." Again he paused. Then, "It took me years to realize that I was not responsible for his foul deed. He was. It took me years to track him down, but I did it. I found him." Holding both his hands in front of him like claws, he said, "I killed him. With these two hands, I destroyed the foul beast." Nick stared at the man, just as every other man and woman in the little group was doing. "Ever since, I have lived outside of society. Ever since, I have been an outcast. But let me tell you, it is better to be an outcast than a nothing. It is better to do what you must to rid the world of evil than to sit by comfortably and pretend that eradicating evil is someone else's responsibility. You must take the responsibility on yourselves. You must rise and strike."